Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable.
All right, so next up is another perennial favorite of mine. Is that right? Perennial favorite? All-time, long-time favorite? Little Women by Louisa May Alcott. This is a book I have loved since I was a teeny tiny child. I don't even want to tell you how old I was the first time I read this book, but because nobody would believe I could read that early, but I was a very early reader. So, but yeah, this is a book I love. There's the 2019 movie. It's hugely popular. As far as like this being a choice we could make that would probably get people who saw the movie and maybe haven't read the book in a long time or never read the book, maybe they've read the book since they saw the movie, they might be interested in this. It's right up there in the popular conscience again. Again, I don't know when the last time it was. I mean, Little Women has been around for, well, since 1868. Again, looking at this book, you know, in the last few days, I was like, oh my gosh, here we are, Civil War. Again, you know, this is one I find really fascinating to juxtapose with Gone with the Wind, because this is the North. This one takes place, you know, their family lives in the North in Little Women. This is the Union. Her father, you know, the girl's father goes to war as a minister. I mean, he's a minister, but he's going to be a chaplain in the Union Army. I mean, this is the flip side, if you will, of the Gone with the Wind story. Written in two completely different time periods. Little Women written in 1868. In 1869, Gone with the Wind, 1936. So we have to be careful when we're talking about fictional but set in historical. When the books are written also matters. You know, it's not just right. When was right. The historical era, it's what's the author's perspective. So,
right, right. Yeah, she was actually a Civil War nurse.
Right. Louisa May Alcott lived through this. This is basically a fictionalized version of her personal story, her family story. And so there's, you know, we have to be fair to her on that and everything. But I think that some of the passages that I went back and looked at, I was like, wow, you know, there are great lines about feminism. There are great passages about the role expectations of women. Again, looking, you know, which made me think of, you know, the expectations of women in Gone with the Wind. And, you know, I mean, those two really seem to go well, you know, together for me, but yet be so different from each other and have so much that we could do with both of them together and separately, that these Gone with the Wind and Little Women really are like way up there for me this year. Mm-hmm. That's just how I feel. And the romantic stuff, the romance notion is still there, because there are a lot of romances in this book. You know, in Little Women, they're more than most people think, and some of them are. You know, going back through it, I was like, Amy has all the best lines. I hate to tell you, but she's got the best lines, especially when it comes to love. You know, it's just, I was like, who knew? You know, so. But that's just a little bit from me. What do you think about Little Women?
I think that you bringing up this new theme that we could have this year about, you know, pandemic isolation. Mm-hmm. And that puts into a different perspective Beth. And
yes,
we have a lot of caretakers.
I wasn't going to bring that up, but I'm glad you did. Yeah.
Right. Who they're putting themselves at risk,
yeah,
to treat the sick. And now Beth pays the ultimate price,
yes,
for that,
she does.
Like we're seeing,
yep,
in society right now. And I, yeah, think that could be a really interesting conversation.
I would love it if, I'm not sure any of the passages I pulled had that much to do with that particular situation, because I get very emotional when I read the scenes that involve Beth's illness and her dying, because when I was little, that was what I thought was going to happen to me. I mean, I was diagnosed with a very rare and incurable lung disease at a very young age. The only experience I had with death was in books, and Beth's death was the only, as a child, she was the only child deaf that I was real familiar with, and I was being told by doctors that's what was going to happen to me. And so I still to this day I get very emotional when I revisit those passages, but they are some of the most poignant and beautifully written, powerful passages. I get emotional. You know, I know them so well. I can hear them in my head, and I'm just like, ooh, you know. But I do think that those speak. I mean, you can't sit today in your living room alone, see the news, hear, watch the headlines go by about the people whose loved one has died in a COVID-19 unit in a hospital somewhere. They were not with them. No family members were there. Their bodies were taken away, and in New York, they're being buried somewhere. Who knows? You know, I mean, there's no funerals, there's no wakes, there's no gatherings, there's no, you know, there's just that bizarre. I keep coming back to, like, you know, it's like in times of war, things are so surreal and strange, and yet, you know, the last time there was a war on our soil, literally, was the Civil War, or I suppose if you lived in New York or Philadelphia or Pennsylvania, you could say 9/11, but, you know, we haven't had that here, and it's like sort of how people feel now, is that we're having that here, you know, it's happening right down the street, and, you know, and I feel like this book, written by a woman who clearly wasn't meeting every social norm of her day, you know, does a wonderful job expressing some of that and the emotion and the toll, like you said, the toll is taking on the people who are left behind, you know, or caring for the weaker, you know, people who are weaker, sicker, at risk. So
right,
yeah, this,
and
this,
I want to be real sensitive as we pick the exact quote, not to pick a quote that's gonna be like triggering for
right
you.
Oh no, I didn't mean that, but and like I said, I don't even know that I have very many of those on my list of passages, because they were too triggering for me. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm not gonna shy away from the difficult, so mm-hmm. I'm perfectly good with picking whatever we both feel is the best one to put out there.
Right. Yeah, and I agree about the romances, and particularly if we get into the life of Alcott,
yeah,
and how there was pressure put on her to end it,
yes,
with the romance this,
yeah,
way, and she kind of did the no, I'm going to do it this way,
yeah,
and yeah, I think that could be a good conversation.
Yeah,
there,
we
too.
Got a lot to, this has a lot to work with. I mean, there's so many, you know, you and I both tend to find a feminist theme in almost anything we ever choose. And this one, believe it or not, with the diminutive little name, Little Women, you know, the kind of, this book has an awful lot of meat on that bone, too. So, I mean, I think we have a lot of options. And I don't want it to sound like we should have one universal theme for our four books. I just think once we pick our four books, we'll have several different ways of approaching them.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
All right.
And
so,
I mean, we've had that for several years where,
yeah,
in discussion we'll find,
yeah,
here's a theme that runs through,
yeah,
them. Like
that's just kind of happened a little early this year because we've been isolated, so we've both been, you know, kind of looking at these a little more ahead of time than we might have, you know,
mm-hmm,
in years past. All right. Okay, so next up we have Portrait of Jenny by Robert Nathan, published in 1940. I'm going to say, as my little note and my thing says, many themes to explore. This, of all the books, I think, in our list, this one's the most philosophical in terms of the language and the writing style of Robert Nathan. So many of the passages, again, and this is a very in the character's head presentation from the author. That's how this book is written. It's written from the thoughts of the characters. And so much of the language and the way it's written is has a lot of philosophical questions. This is the big picture book. This goes beyond the little love story, if you will, the strange supernatural happenings and stuff. It becomes a bigger question, you know. Everything is bigger than what that smaller thing is, and I love that about this book because it gives us so much to jump into. And I gotta say, of all the books, this one almost every single passage I had selected was like, oh my God, that's pandemic. Oh my God, that's pandemic. You know, it really related to the philosophical musings and feelings of depression and isolation and things. I mean, there's a lot going on in this book. Who knew, though?
It has been years, admittedly, Ella, since I read this. Can you remind me briefly the plot of this?
Yes. At its most basic, this is a story of a young man who, well, he's not like super young, but he's a young man, a struggling artist, and he meets a little girl in the park, and he kind of thinks she's cute and interesting. She sings a goofy little song, and he keeps seeing her. But when he sees her, she's always a little bit older than she was the last time he saw her. And so, you know, I think for a lot of people, they think it's a story of a grown-up man who's in love with a child, which is gross. That's not exactly what this is. This is a supernatural story of this woman meets the love of her life as a child, but he's a grown-up. So she, we don't really know this right away, but she is jumping through time to try to catch up so that they can be together as grown-ups. And, you know, and he doesn't get that at first. And there are moments where he thinks he's going crazy. He doesn't understand. He saw her a month ago and she was 12 and now she's 15, you know, or whatever, you know, whatever the ages are. I don't remember the details of the ages. But, you know, and his landlady has a reaction because, you know, it's still in a time period where, you know, a young man shouldn't have a young woman up in his apartment alone, you know, and she's like, oh, this is not appropriate. You know, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, cultural norms in there of behavior between, you know, people who are of age and courting or people who don't seem to be quite the appropriate age. Like, why is this little girl up in your apartment? You know, so it's and it has a tragic ending. It's not a happy ending. It's so beautifully written. And if you read it and feel it has to do with like, I think when we were talking about true love and great romances, this wouldn't be on the top of most people's list for true love and great romances, but think about how many movies or books you've read or TV shows have had to do with someone, you know, battling time, going back in time, going forward in time, going through time, whatever, to be with the person they're meant to be with. This is that story, you know, this is that story, so... it's fascinating to me. It's got a lot of good elements in it that I think we could explore. And as far as like relating it to beyond the little bit of supernatural and a little bit of the great romances kind of thing, but going into what's going on in our world today, again, this is the most philosophical. This is a lonely young man. He doesn't have I think he has one or two friends in the whole book. He's very alone. And it's a very solitary life that he has, and what we get from his dialogue in his head and how he's presented to us, I think there are a lot of passages that would really be therapeutic and helpful, you know, in the conversations that are going on today. It's just fascinating how this is all like shaking out in my brain anyway.
Sure. Yeah, again, I'm not as familiar with that one, but I do like what you're saying about that speculative fiction element. Yeah. And if we have a few that have that could be some really interesting comparison there.
Yeah, because again, the world right now seems almost supernaturally surreal in some ways. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's you know, a lot of that's just because, you know, we're isolated and we're all going crazy, but, you know... this book is one of my all-time favorite books in the world, but I really feel like it's probably getting higher up in the list than I originally thought it would be for this particular year's project, which, you know, I kind of put it in there thinking, oh yeah, great romances, I could spin that, I could prove to Sarah E that this is about true love and all that stuff, and yet it's got some controversy and it's a little bit weird, and, you know, and now I look at it, I'm like, man, this is like perfect, you know, so, yeah.
Okay, I think we're to our last one, Turn of the Screw.
Turn of the Screw, not one of my favorites in general. I put it on the list because when, you know, back in months and months and months ago, I was looking at romances, supernatural elements, things like this, and Turn of the Screw certainly fits that category. of thematically, I guess is what I mean. But also I was looking at character expectations of females, expectations of men, how women see men, how men see women. This book has a lot of that in it. There are some descriptive scenes, and this also is a book where you get a lot of the thoughts of the characters. Mm-hmm. This one strikes me as, for much of the time, our main character, the governess lady, I can't remember her name, the governess, she is battling, at least she thinks she is, invisible, and you know, this invisible enemy, this spectral presence. There's something happening, and some of it, you know, one thing I do love about this book is the way Henry James, kind of leaves it up to the reader to determine how much of that is just her own psychological, emotional repression issues, whatever you want to call it, and how much of it is actually happening in reality. You don't ever really get that answer. It's up to you, the reader. And I think that's very well done in this book that was published in 1898. So, but again, published in 1898, we're looking at a time period where the expectations for women, especially women who were of a certain class, like a governess, compared to, say, her employer, you know, and the kind of relationships that were appropriate and kind that weren't. And then there's also these children involved, and the other servants, and then the bad guys, the invisible enemies, and are they real, are they not, the ghosts, whatever you want to call them, you know, there's a lot going on there. And it, to me, I guess the sense of internal isolation and am I going crazy kind of stuff reflects, you know, a lot of what we've been talking about already, that the governess is going through these things she thinks she sees. She for most of the book, she thinks she's in control. You know, it seems like she's trying to get control, or she's thinks she has control, and then the times when that kind of breaks down and she's like, whoa, you know, those are compelling. So excuse me. So there's a lot that we could do with this book when it comes to specific passages and stuff. But
I love the mystery of the term mystery. I don't think of it as a romance. For
the recording says this meeting is being recorded.
Sorry, I bumped my I think I bumped one of my things. I think we're still recording though. It's just I'm not sure what happened there.
But yeah, I like the mystery and turn of the screw. I really like that. And I think it could pair quite well with a couple of our books. First was the governess themes.
Yep.
Jane Eyre. It's gothic. She's a governess. A lot about class.
Yeah.
That could pair really well. Also, the role of self-deception.
Yeah,
that could even pair with Emma as far as self-deception goes.
I think self-deception goes in all of our books, come to think of it, if you really think about it, from, you know, Gone with the Wind, Dracula, Emma, Little Women, Portrait of Jenny, Jane Eyre, Dorian Gray. I mean, my gosh, that's, you know, the internal workings of these characters' minds. And by these characters, I don't necessarily mean the main character only. You know, we got a lot of characters in these books, and I think that's a very valid point, that that's probably our most common theme.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I think for me, part of what's going to determine Turn of the Screw, because I'm going to hold out for Jane Eyre till the very end.
Yeah.
Do we want two which are kind of similar in that way of supernatural, gothic, governess?
Yeah.
Do we want two of those? Because they're different enough to have great comparison, but are they too similar?
This is my least favorite of our top eight, our short list of eight. And I'm the one that put it on the list, so I take full responsibility for that. I'm happy to save it for another year to look at it again some other time. I have, you know, in the last, I don't know, say 8 months or so, I have watched several of the movie adaptations, and I can't remember if one was a TV adaptation, but or, you know, for television adaptation. But I've watched, you know, movies of it. I've read it. I think it would work, you know, any time, you know, on other years, other lists. It is my least favorite on this one. So I'm happy to say let's take it off the list and we're down to 7.
That's fine. I mean, it's one that I would enjoy, but I have others I like better.
Yeah, you say that so much better than I do. takes me 5 minutes to say what you say in 5 seconds. Yeah. This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org.
This activity made possible in part with support from the Indiana Arts Commission and the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.